For taking a ride on the Freedom Train podcast series. I'm your host, Joseph Ford, and as always, ride with me is my good homie, Mr. Patrick Irving. And remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit their website at www.pactsinc.org. That way you can learn more about the organization, their codes of conduct, how to become a member, how to donate to the organization, how to become more involved in the literacy programs, the sports programs, and the surveys. And if you hover your mouse over that more tab, you see a drop-down box right up in your face there, right? And then you hover your mouse over that learning box there. I mean, the learning tab, and another drop-down box comes. And you got all types of resources that you can use to enhance your knowledge base. And once again, that website is www.pactsinc.org. And while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can learn more about my magnificent self, Joseph Ward. You can learn more about Patrick Irvin. You can learn more about Enigma September and Shelby Davis, all of the hosts of our podcast right here on the Freedom Train Network. Once again, the website is www.freedomtrainradio.com. You can find our podcast on just about all podcast outlets, Radio Public, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeart Podcast, wherever they are. Where else they at, Pat? Everywhere, right, Pat?
Yeah, everywhere.
Everywhere. You ain't never there. And if we ain't there, let us know so we can get there. You heard me? Shoot. But this is the greatest podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. So sit back, relax, get your mind right while we go ahead to drop these topics and these discussions, these interviews on you at all times. Make sure you tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. If you're trying to be cool, trying to be somebody in life and be successful, you need to listen to the Freedom Train. Ain't that right, Pat?
Word.
That's all you got. After all that I said, that's all you got to say is word. You can't put no passion into your support, though.
Word.
He's a robot. We got an automaton on here with us. Here, drone. Man, what's good on this good December 1st, man?
Not much, man. You know, trying to get the skin in for the win. You feel me, doozy?
Nah.
I don't know what that means either, but it came out, so deal with it.
Yeah, man. So, now, you know, every December 1st is World AIDS Day. So
World AIDS Day.
So today is World AIDS Day. So that's going to be one of the topics that we cover right here on our show today, World AIDS Day. The other topic we're going to cover will be human trafficking. We're going to talk these subjects, HIV, AIDS, human trafficking, the subjects that we've talked about in the past on separate podcasts. This, so it'll be the first time we talk about these two particular subjects together on this particular podcast. But since today's World AIDS Day, by the time you listen to it, it's going to be the 4th, but still, it's the same effect, though. World AIDS Day, it extends however long we need to extend so you can get the message right. But we'll talk about HIV AIDS, especially in our community, but also talk about human trafficking within our community. We're going to talk about human trafficking first and then talk about HIV AIDS. But we got a guest host. And we're going to have a couple guests that join us today. But as of right now, we got a guest host that's on the line with us now. He is the man out of Philadelphia, PA. He ain't down with state property or the rock, but he still hold it down. You're talking about he... There you go. Not really, but yeah. He's from North Philly, so that's different. He's the director and the creator of the Independence Day Project.
In South Philadelphia, born and raised.
Yeah, whatever he said. He's the mind behind What About Us. He's a community activist. He's a lecturer. He's an educator. He's a professor, a real professor. He's big in this community. He's a speaker. whatever you need him to do, he'll do it. He's a very down brother. He don't have no agenda. He's just very passionate about helping this community. So I want everybody, as soon as my mouth starts to work. See, this the devil, this the work of the devil right here, Pat. I worked up with that intro, right? And I go to bring in my hand claps, and my mouth want to get stuck.
Well, you said two things. You said two things that he probably don't rock with. That's why your mouth got stuck.
What two things I said?
Well, first thing you said was whatever you need him to do, he'll do it.
Hey, man, I was talking about community-wise. If you got a good plan and a good agenda, and you really about your stuff, not just willy-nilly.
Now you're putting qualifications on it.
No, no. Well, nobody said it was unconditional.
The second thing you said was that he ain't have an agenda. He does have an agenda.
I didn't say he didn't have an agenda.
Yeah, you did.
No, I didn't.
He got no agenda. Yes, you did. Check the tape, bro. Check the tape, bro.
If I probably did say that. You know what? But what I meant was no negative agenda, man. Forget you, dog. First of all, don't be trying to sully this. All right? Forget you. My mouth's work again. So think about what I said in that intro and get that same feeling back in your heart. And forget what Pat said because he smelled like doo-doo anyway. So it don't even matter. But now, man, I want everybody to get up out of your seat, put your hands together for the one and only Professor Carl Tone Jones. What's going on, my brother?
Hey, brother, all good in the neighborhood, you know. You did say I didn't have an agenda, bro. I was going to say something about that, but I'm glad good brother.
Not in a sense like that. No bad agenda. I meant that. What I mean, he ain't got no bad tricks up his sleeve. He has an agenda for the people, but not no bad agenda for, like, being a sucker. He ain't no sucker, all right? Just clear that up for America.
I appreciate that, bro. Yeah, because the agenda is bad for some people, just not our people. You know, when it comes to the liberation of black minds and black bodies, you know, that's my agenda, and to create a liberated space for black people. So that's not beneficial for everybody. It's only beneficial for black people. And if you're not part of that, you know, or you don't think you'll benefit from being a part of it, then I can see how you can say that's a negative agenda. It's not a nefarious agenda because my agenda is intended to help our community by any means necessary.
There you go.
But at the same time, you know, there are people who stand to lose a little something when we gain a little something. So, you know, we have to always keep that in mind. But it's always a pleasure to be riding the freedom train with you brothers. I appreciate you having me on the TV.
Man, ain't no thing but a chicken wing. So, Pat, you ready?
Ready for what?
What you mean ready for what?
Turned down for what, man?
There you go. So go ahead, my brother. Go. You finna say something, my brother?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, I'm ready. I ain't found the statistics that I was looking for yet, but I'm. You know, we can go ahead and start the discussion.
All right. I'm just checking. Make sure you ready, bruh. So, like I said, our two topics today are human trafficking within the black community. And we kind of want to talk about this again. It's kind of put it at the forefront of people's minds, kind of put it in perspective, and also do our best to think about solutions or to verbalize solutions that can be put into action immediately. And then we're going to talk about HIV in the black community in honor of World AIDS Day. And so when we get to the World AIDS Day, you know, we're kind of going, I give you the background information on World AIDS Day, but also how it's relevant to us as black people and our total black community, not just in America, but around the world. But we're going to focus on America today. So one of the reasons why I want to talk about this human trafficking is because it seems as if every day a new young black girl is missing, or a black woman is missing. Now, I think that was 2016 when Pat and I did the show on the 64,000 black women that were missing. Was that 2016, Pat?
Yeah, it was somewhere around there. We done a lot of shows about missing black folk.
But it was like one of the initial ones to kind of kick off this string of different shows that we do, because we have specific numbers with this one. We're like 64,000 missing black girls and women. Now, there have been more videos, more articles, more news stories and things out now about human trafficking as a whole. But we also see the stories about black women or black girls in particular who are victims of human trafficking who are missing now. And a lot of them are assumed to believe to be a part of human trafficking. But we do know it's a big issue. We see now different videos of women talking about attempted abductions. I know I saw a video by a young lady who escaped out of a trunk of a moving car. So it's a lot of different things going on surrounding human trafficking that we want to kind of put into perspective. So for one, kind of remind people, and not to minimize what's going on now, but to remind people that this has been an issue for a while, to kind of get some context to that. Look at solutions and things that we can do to help keep the members of our community safer from the human trafficking. Also, how can we get rid of the human traffickers out of our community? And then, you know, just kind of go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, kind of put our minds to it and bring it up to speed, but also put real context and perspective to it. So moving forward, we can know that we've did something concise that can help limit or end human trafficking, especially within our community. But go ahead, Pat.
No, I was just gonna say. So from what I can see now, from the most recent numbers that I can see, which were from prior to 2015, looks like they're a combination of 2013, 2014 numbers. The Department of Justice reported that 60% of human trafficking suspects, including both children and adults, were African American. And African-American children make up 52% of all juvenile prostitution arrests. So, basically, black people are more likely to be trafficked, and black children are more likely to be involved in prostitution. And then with that, we got to put it in the perspective of percentage of the, you know, disproportionate percentages. Black people are only 12-13% of the
population. Right, so the percentage is going to be high.
From a different metric, we're 13-14% of the 12-13% of the population of America, but we make up 62% of the trafficking suspects, and we make up 52% of all juvenile prostitution arrests. And 40% of all victims of human trafficking are black people in America. So, oh, I'm sorry, 40% of the victims of human trafficking in America are black people. So when you look at our percentage of the population being 12-13%, we are very much overrepresented in terms of
right.
Basically everything around surrounding human trafficking. So
right.
I just wanted to get those statistics.
Okay.
It's kind of the precursor to the conversation.
I'm glad you did that because it helps paint the conversation. So, Professor, start with you.
Yes, sir.
Why do you think black women make up the majority of the victims of human trafficking, in your opinion, or from your information?
Well, one of the things, and see, this is something that we've been talking about for a long time. This goes back to organ donors. I mean, not organ donors, but, you know, organ trafficking. And,
right.
You know, body swapping and all those different things. And when you talk about black women have, what makes them viable targets is they have the most complete genetic sequence when it comes to DNA. So anybody can utilize you know, these sisters in terms of their body parts and organs, and pretty much they're matched for just about everybody on the planet. And a lot of the trafficking networks, until recently, these were networks that were international networks. You know, we were talking about, you know, people disappearing during the earthquake in Haiti. We were talking about people disappearing during the outbreak of Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. You know, every time there's some sort of disaster, it seems like there's an uptick in these particular things, and it often, you know, centers around, you know, communities that are African in nature. And the human trafficking aspect of this, I mean, look back at the young brother, Kendrick Johnson, and I believe it was right outside of Atlanta in Georgia, when he went missing, and they found him wrapped up in a gym mat, and his body parts, his organs were missing. These are things that are happening. You know, this has been going on for a long time, but we were considered conspiracy theorists up until recently because there was not a groundswell of physical evidence or visible evidence, I would say, such as, you know, what you're seeing with some of these recordings now, actually capturing this on video. But one of the reasons I think black women are targeted more so, especially, you know, in addition to their genetic sequences, is I think black women are the most desired people in the world, in terms of their sexuality and things of that nature and so forth. They're targeted because I think there's a market for black women, specifically overseas. You know, when you start talking about, you know, going and shipping and maneuvering, I think there's a market for that overseas. So, I mean, that's not something, that's a theory. I can't necessarily prove that, but and I think there's another aspect too, is that black women are not seen as viable in this culture, in this American culture that we live in. So they're not as protected as white women, you know, and they're not but they're more desirable than women from other ethnicities, even though other ethnicities are being snatched up as well.
Okay, Pat, what are your thoughts on why black women are the majority of the victims of sexual of human trafficking?
Well, I agree with PC. I think there's, especially in European countries, former colonial nations, there's still very much a fetish to have sex with black women, and I think, you know, we'd be naive to deny that. Even when you look at some of the other numbers that I was looking at in the build-up to this show, and I can't remember what the source was, so I'm hesitant to use it, but fuck it, it's a podcast. So is that most of the labor human traffic people are not black, but most of the sexual human traffic people are black. I think that speaks directly to the fact that there's still a strong appetite for black bodies in a sexual sense. And then you add to that, you know, I agree with everything PC said from the standpoint of the desirability, the lack of protection that black women have. You know, a black woman can come up missing and people won't care. Hence, we keep having stories about black people, black women in particular, coming up missing. Even not too long ago, a couple years back, there was that story of a police officer or somebody who had raped all of these black women. And, you know, I think he said he did it because he knew nobody would care. You know, right. There are other stories of rapists who honed their craft in the black community before they moved on to the other communities because they knew nobody would care. So, you know, all of those things paint a very real picture for how black women are viewed in American society and how much they're protected in American society.
Now, I do agree that black women are, for one of the main reasons is it's easier to be violent toward a black woman because when it comes to other women and other people in society, they don't people don't, the white society and stuff don't care about black women outside of the desire for them, or looking at black women who can clean up their mess or run their companies or run their households and things. But outside of that, there is no care for the black woman. I do also kind of look at that from inside our community. It's I think it's some people who don't care, but I think it's becoming a reality to a lot of black people that this is something that's happening. And I don't think that's all. It's always been something that we kind of paid attention to. When it comes to like just black women going missing, unless it personally may have happened to you, but from the standpoint of, you know, I don't know any black women who went missing or who were victims of sex trafficking, but I feel like something they need to be done about it. I think it's more people like that now than it was in the past. But I do agree with the desiring of black women, and also black women have always, when it comes to European and America, black women have always been victims of human trafficking. I mean, if we look at it from a real historical context, I mean, slavery in itself was human trafficking. So that's something that black women have always been a part of here, where, you know, via the transatlantic slave trade, or even via the Arabic slave trade, or via the Jewish slave trade, or any other forms of servitude that black women had to serve as concubines and all these different things. So that's something that has.
You're being nice. Huh? Sorry. I'm going to let you finish. But you're being
I'm
nice.
Being nice?
You're being
I'm
nice.
Being nice?
You're being nice.
How I'm being nice? Tell, who's go ahead and say it.
Whose responsibility is it to end human trafficking in the black community? That's what everybody want to talk about.
It's all
responsibility is it? Whose fault fault is it? Is it black men's fault? Is black men ain't shit? Or is it black women's fault because they not dressed appropriately? Whose fault is it?
Well, I don't think it's no single person's fault. Well, but go ahead, say what's on your mind.
Man's fault or the woman's fault? So whose fault is it?
Say it again.
It's got to be either the man's fault or the woman's fault. So whose fault is it?
Well, I can't be both sides.
Nah, we don't want to hear that. PC, correct your friend.
Whatever. You're talking truth on here.
Well, I think that there's a joint accountability.
Right. Here.
I mean, there's a joint accountability in terms of us placing a priority in terms of protecting our community. And what this is symptomatic of the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is we still have not become accountable for the ongoings within our community and things that affect our community. We have not claimed it. We have not claimed our community as a community. Therefore, things that happen, we're reactionary to. And then we want to, you know, look at what can be done. We have to start reverse engineering all of these things to understand that it comes back to the basics. And the basics is, you know, you love and you protect your own. And that's what's happening. That's what's not happening in our community. We don't love each other or ourselves, and we keep putting ourselves in situations where we're reactionary and we have to be rescued. You know, when you start talking about, you know, being targets of human trafficking, and, you know, now they're even, you know, using black people to be the low-hanging fruit and the whole dynamic of human trafficking, where they're actually going out and, you know, managing these local connections, and they're the ones that are actually driving around in the vans and doping up and snatching these women and children. And they've become sort of like the face of it now. This is an epidemic that's been an epidemic for a long time. We can remember back 2-3 years ago when there was a big story about all the missing girls in Washington, D.C., and the D.C. and the DMV area, and we still have not recovered from that. We can talk about 64,000. I've seen the number that's as high as 78,000 black women that go missing every year. You know, we can talk about all those different things, but, you know, in terms of dealing with it, you have to address the causes of the symptoms. And the causes of the symptoms is the fact that we as a community have failed miserably at doing the basic things that a community must do. And when you talk about the basic things a community must do to survive, a community must first be the providers of their own security. You know, the providers of, if you're not a provider of your own security in your community, then there is no community, because you can't protect it. And if you can't protect it, you can't claim it. And that's something that we have to get our minds wrapped around in terms of the not just talking part of it, the action part of it. Something Joe spoke of a few minutes ago in regard to our apathy, our apathetic approach to these situations. And the reason why is because we've become desensitized. Social media has done a brilliant job of desensitizing us to the issues that matter the most. And because it's not happening on your block, or because it's not happening to members of your family, you know, you become distant. You don't feel a personal connection to it, because we are fed this information every day. I see dozens of stories where we're sharing pictures of people who are missing, pictures of somebody that was last seen this place, that place. And, well, what happened to, you know, when we would have, when somebody would go missing and we would have a meeting in the community, we would go looking for them house to house, knocking on doors, things of that nature. Those things aren't happening anymore. We're relying on the technology, and the technology is making us cold, because you don't feel the warmth of the of human embrace. You don't feel that connection to people anymore. So therefore, you know, when we're dealing with these situations, we don't feel any sort of, we don't have an empathetic response to them. And there, you know, then you see the lack of care until it happens close to home. It's just like somebody getting murdered. You don't care about the crime rate. Crime rate can go down. But if somebody in your family gets caught in that triangle, if they get caught in that cycle of violence, then all of a sudden it's an epidemic to you. But this is an epidemic to the community. And we have not learned from the first lesson of the Civil Rights Movement, which was the lesson of Emmett Till, from Mamie Till, when she said the problem of one of us better be the business of all of us. We have not learned from that, because we continue to repeat that same thing over and over. I don't know when we'll ever learn it.
Nah, I'm with you. I went to a training not too long ago. It was like a prostitution roundtable training, and the organization is like a prostitution roundtable where we get together, we talk about ways to prevent it. But they had a couple of presenters who was looking at different statistics and all types of things. And at that training, I started thinking about the different young women who I've come across in my time doing like my HIV prevention and stuff like that. So over the last 10 years, I've come across like 5 young black girls that I can definitely say are victims of human trafficking by their own family, their own mothers, their own grandmothers, like family members who are trafficking these young women out. And so when you talk about a shared responsibility, that's what I am. It's a shared responsibility on the community as a whole, because as a community, well, you have people who represent different aspects of the community who are part of it. So it would take people who represent different aspects of the community to fight it, because even when I see, like, I see reports of black people who are trafficking other, like, young black girls, and it just, you know, this is something that's been going on for a while, and I just want people to really kind of understand that this is past the time where we, like PC just said, where we no longer pay attention to things because it ain't our business. We got to get back to stuff being our business. Or even if we ain't getting back to it, we got to start making stuff our business that's not our business. Because either you two or both of you see the video that the young lady posted? I forgot what city she was in, but she was just talking about how she just almost got snatched up. Like, it was a black lady. She had just almost got snatched up. She was on live and she was talking about it. Did any of y'all see that, like, social media, Facebook or Instagram or something? Or more so PC than Pat?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And so seeing that, like, what were your thoughts and feelings when you saw that particular video?
Well, the one thing I thought of when I saw the video was that people, we're not paying attention to the landscape. And it's time for us to act nonchalant, to walk around with our head in the cloud in regards to, you know, our surroundings, what happens. I mean, even as a black man, I'm 6'3", 295 pounds, you know, I don't walk around not aware of my surroundings. My head is always on the swivel. And I'm getting tired of our sisters who are not paying attention to their surroundings, this nonchalant attitude that we have about our safety. And I hope people don't see this as me coming down on the victim. I'm trying to prevent more victims by saying we need to be smarter and proactive in our movement. So when I saw a sister who let her go, a sister who was assuming that she was in a safer place and environment than she was, a sister that, you know, who got caught up out there, and thankfully, you know, she was able to find a hole in their net and break out of that situation. But we're seeing those things happen far too much. Sisters are going to the gas stations late at night by themselves. Sisters are going all over the world. Don't tell nobody where they're going because they ain't nobody's business but their own. And I'm really harping on this with the sisters because men ain't getting snatched up. The brothers ain't getting snatched up. You know what I'm saying? Young black boys, if they're over the age of 15, 14, 15, they're not getting snatched up. So, you know, I'm putting the onus on our sisters to be more mindful of their surroundings, let people know where they're going, stop leaving. I mean, this is stuff we talked about in the Independence Day Project. We become serious about our security and understanding the war that's taking place on our community. And this is another form of warfare in our community. You know, we start becoming more accountable about it, we'll start moving different. You know, we'll start making sure that we don't go places alone. We'll start making sure that we're vigilant in terms of, you know, whether or not we're being set up for a trap. We'll be vigilant in terms of letting people know our whereabouts. If I'm somewhere and I'm by myself, I want to be on the phone with somebody, letting them know. And I'm talking about the sisters, you know. And I have this conversation with my sister. You know what I'm saying? A friend of mine, not a friend, but a close friend of my family, I consider family, was nearly abducted the same way 3 weeks ago. Somebody saw her out, she was nonchalantly somewhere, and they approached her, snatched her, grabbed her, and she had to fight for her life. And then when she was able to recount what happened, she realized it was four guys trying to get her into the back of a van. You know, these things are, you know, you can't be nonchalant about your surroundings anymore. It's happening. And, you know, it's mind-blowing to me that in this day and age, when you see it now, this ain't just us telling you. You see it now. And we still have people who are caught off guard. I mean, after a while, you have to think, what the hell is going on? That we're not recognizing these things and being proactive about dealing with it.
Well, I want to play devil's advocate. So, isn't it the objective of the traffickers to want to catch people off guard, to make sure that you put people in a position that they can be caught off guard?
Yeah. But let's just say, okay, not that we're prey, but just let's say that you're a mouse and that you know a cat is in the house. Well, most mice, if I smell the cat scent, mice vacate that house. They go to another house. We got to get used to smelling the scent. We got to get used to seeing the signs. You know, yes, it's their job to create those scenarios, and they're very good at it. They zip tie people's windshields or wipers. They put notices and stuff on people on the front of the car, so that somebody get out the car, whip the car to get the flyer off the windshield, and they snatch them up. They're catching them in garages and things of that nature. You gotta be smart about where we park our cars. I still see people today that's not doing nothing. So yeah, it's their job to do that, but it's also your job to survive. It's your job to make sure that you get home every day. It's your job to make sure that, you know, that you make sure that you're safe, that you're protected. And we can't keep, you know, playing the victim role, not saying we're playing victim role, but if we're not doing the proactive things to prevent those things from happening. You do all those things and they still get you, at least we can say, damn, well, you know, they put the measures in place to prevent it, and then these vandals, they upped the ante a little bit, and they were able to, you know, become more sophisticated in how they operated. But they're not even being sophisticated right now. They're just really driving up and snatching people who ain't paying attention. That aloof mentality has to stop.
Yeah, okay, so go ahead, Pat. I was just about to ask.
It actually reminds me of what's happening in Venezuela. You know, the economy in Venezuela crashed. If you're not aware of what happened, it's been happening over the past few years. I did a show on it. Let's put a screen from the screen. Of course, go check that out. But anyways, it actually is funny. It's not funny, but it's interesting that that's the same thing that was happening in Venezuela when the economy crashed. Anybody that they thought might be worth any value, they would just snatch them right out in the middle of the road. And so it's funny because when other people are doing it in other countries or it's happening in, you know, the U.S. is usually pretty quick to condemn. But when it's happening to black citizens in black America, in America, silence. So, you know, because we've been having these shows for so long, and I told Mo and PC, I was like, I really don't have much new to say because we keep having these shows, but we still need to continue to have these shows. So I just thought it was interesting when he mentioned how they're being snatched up out of the street. You know, that's literally the same behavior we're seeing in countries and places where economies have collapsed.
Yeah. All right, so before PC get up out of here, let's talk solutions.
Do a show.
Right. We're going to plug that real quick. But, Pat, quick. Solutions. What are, and it could be something totally different, but what do you, well, I want you to talk real quick. Then we're going to let him close it out before he deals. So, solutions.
Oh, solutions. Everybody need to be more aware, like he said. Black men and black women need to start standing up for each other. That's real quick. You can go deeper, but I think that's real quick. That's it.
So how do we become more aware?
Pay attention to your surroundings. Stop taking your life for granted. Stop assuming that what you read about in the history books happened a long time ago. And if you didn't read about it in the history books, I know you heard about it or saw it in the documentary. Stop assuming all that stuff happened thousands and thousands of years ago right after the pyramids was built. No, that shit happened right, you know, like yesterday. So I do think there's a historical awareness that needs to be had so that people can put things in the proper context. But then there's also a need to understand and believe the history that you read, even if that history was from a couple hours ago. Where you read a story about somebody being kidnapped, abducted, or whatever the case might be. So I think, you know, a raising of people's levels of awareness to what's going on now and what has happened historically will cause people to be more aware in their day-to-day movings. PC's aware because he knows what's possible and he knows what has happened. And the same could be said for all of us.
All right, so solutions from you, PC. What do you think are some viable solutions that people can employ now?
Well, I mean, I agree with Pat. We need to, you know, start valuing our lives, stop taking things for granted. You know, this era of invincibility that seemed to capture, you know, certain segments of our community really needs to be checked. And what's happening is exposing us to being even more vulnerable to things that are just obvious and everyday, you know, happening. I think that we need to be on the lookout for, you know, these particular vans. There have been a lot of, not just white vans, but typically it's been a white van, but if you see a van with no windows, you know, and you need to be on call. You need to be on lookout. You need to, you know, your senses need to be heightened. If you see a van or SUV, and the windows are smoked out, tinted to the point that you can't see through them. You know, you need to be aware of those things. You need to be aware at times when you should be at the gas station. These are the perfect times for a lot of people, specifically women, to be kidnapped because, you know, you're out of your car, you're pumping the gas, and you're not really paying attention to your surroundings. Be more aware of what's around you. Call somebody. Be on the phone with somebody so that, you know, so somebody can know exactly where you are, what you're doing, and also as a possible deterrent to somebody that might be trying to snatch you up. If they see you on the phone, that, you know, that might give them pause. I'm not saying it will, but it might give them pause. Make sure, and this is not just for women, this is also for children, because the children are being snatched up. Make sure that your children are within arm's length of you. Don't turn your back and not pay attention, because when they're snatching these children, they're doing so, and the parent is literally 5-10 feet away. You know, but their back is turned, their attention is on something else, and they turn around and the child is gone. You know, don't travel alone if you don't have to. And if you're doing something late at night, you know, make sure that you have somebody traveling with you. Try to make as few stops as possible. Be in well-lit areas. But if you can't, you know, be with somebody, just make sure that somebody knows where you're at all the time. We have these devices on our cell phones right now that, you know, we're being tracked and monitored through GPS. Then we need to have family members also aware of our locations through GPS just in case something happens. You know what I'm saying? And they can track and monitor us that way. They can't get in touch with us. We need to, you know, start utilizing our common sense, man. And being aware that just like Pat said, this is not, you know, nostalgia we're talking about. These things are real. They're happening. And they're happening in real time. And it can happen to you. Anybody can be a victim on any given time.
Real quick, now I know where you I know, and Pat knows you're coming from a tough love or a love standpoint or reality standpoint. So for people who would listen to this and would hear your response and think that you are blaming women for what's going on, kind of give some context to that. So before you go, people can make sure that they know exactly where you're coming from and not make assumptions. Because I just want to make sure people don't make assumptions about your responses.
Okay, well, you know, I'm not worried about that first part, right?
No, I get it, but I just want to make sure that everything is clear what you're saying.
I got you. So what I'm really speaking to is that I care. I care about the well-being of black women, but we can't always, I can't ride shotgun with every sister. So I need for that sister to be on alert to the dangers that are around her. You know, so what I'm speaking to is from an area, it is from love. And it's the love that they will survive all these particular, you know, predators that are out there angling to do harm to my sister. Last thing I want to do or see or hear is that some harm has come to another sister, especially something that could have been prevented. So what I'm talking about is honestly, you know, being proactive and preventative care so that we can prevent these tragedies from occurring, because, you know, the predator is banking on us slipping, and banking on the sister slipping up, and banking on them presenting opportunities so that they can be snatched up. And I don't want any more sisters to deal with any more harm from, you know, anybody that's out there doing these dastardly deeds.
It is. Hey, Tell them about your show that you're about to do one more real quick, and then your website and stuff where people can learn about the Independence Day Project real quick.
Yeah, I'm about to be late for that. But, yeah, we have a show coming up on by the time you see this, the show already has aired, but I will be doing a Facebook Live, so you'll be able to catch it that way on my Facebook page. But we're going to be talking tonight on David Bond's show, The New Worldview, and we're going to be talking about the human trafficking in regards to what's happening to the sisters and the children in our community. We're going to expand on this particular topic, and we're going to really, you know, get into the conversation as we were in terms of prevention, things that we need to be able to do in the community to put this to a halt. And I also want to talk about the nuanced way that the things being covered by the media and local law enforcement, in which they're making the faces of human trafficking black again. You know, we're going to talk about that, how they're transferring the responsibility of these crimes to the black community. And in terms of my website, the website for which you can get your copy of the Independence Day Project, and there's a digital download available, which you have to also put that as well. Yes, right. We're stepping up the ante. You can go to blackindependence.org. It's blackindependence.org. And once you click on the link for the digital download, you have to, you know, send your payment through Cash App. Or, right now it's Cash App. I haven't set up a PayPal payment yet. And what we'll do is we'll send you the password, and you can actually download the movie to your personal computer, laptop, or whatever you want to do. So, and with that, I say farewell to my brothers. I appreciate you, you know, getting this message out there. This information is needed. And, you know, peace and black power to the family.
That's what we do, man. Appreciate you, man. Y'all give it up for Professor Carl Tone Jones.
Yes, sir.
All right. One more time for Professor Carl Tone Jones coming down and dropping some information off on us. But, you know, Pat, we've been talking about this for a while, but I think this is something that we're going to continue to talk about. We need to continue to talk about so it could be at the forefront of our minds to really get the point that, no, this is real, what's happening to us, and we can't just be we got to do more than just share it on social media, and we got to be able to do more than just talk about it on here. So, it just being more vigilant in the communities. We all just need to be more vigilant in our communities and be more proactive to be able to stop human trafficking, what's going on. You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
Yay. All right, so not to beat that topic into the ground, but we did want to make sure that we express our thoughts and feelings about it again to kind of, you know, put that at the forefront of our mind. But December 1st, it's World AIDS Day. And HIV affects the black community at a disproportionate rate, kind of like with the human trafficking. It affects black people more than other groups of people. So I'm looking at some stats from the CDC. And this is 2017 stats. So, you know, this is kind of like the most recent 2017, 2018. So it's going new HIV diagnosis in the U.S. independent areas for the most affected subpopulations. And so the number one most affected is black male to male sexual contact. Second is Hispanic and Latino male to male contact. Third is white male-to-male contact. Fourth is black women heterosexual contact. Fifth is black men heterosexual contact. Then we got Hispanic-Latina women heterosexual. Then we got white women heterosexual contact. So we got black male-to-male contact, which is first. Black women heterosexual contact, which is fourth. And black male heterosexual contact is fifth. So World AIDS Day, to me, as somebody who works in the field of HIV AIDS prevention, is important. It's a great opportunity to spread more information and do more things to shine a brighter light on what we do on a regular basis. Because for me, in the trenches on a regular basis, every day, this is real out here. Like if you one of the people who think this ain't real, I don't know what to tell you, man. I guess you might be like a flat earther. And Pat, I guess you kind of see where I'm coming from, because you know how people watch these videos on YouTube and then somebody will be like, AIDS ain't real, and then people kind of take that and run with it. You know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
So, and it's the we're still combating things like that within our community, especially when, like, for me, like, I see the shit, bro. Like, I see the shit. Like, we went to the hospital the other day to visit a patient who was in there who's very sick in the ICU. And it's just like, I see the shit. So when somebody says it's not real based off a video that they saw for somebody whose opinion they highly respects, it's just like, well, you ain't even doing no damn research. You just saying what somebody else is saying. Like, that's crazy. But that's why days like this exist, though. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is, until we get to a place where we teach people to think critically, we gonna keep having dumb discussions about shit that shouldn't even really be up for debate. You know, if we're here in 2019, getting ready to be 2020, and you still think AIDS is fake, I don't know that there needs to be something to tell you. Like, you know, you was like, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know that you, like, that there's anything to be said at that point. This is somebody who is being willfully ignorant. They're being intentionally obtuse. You know, like, it's their goal at this point to be ignorant or to be rebellious or to be whatever it is they want to be. You know, as they strive down this road to be enlightened. So, but I do wish people that knew better would do better. Because I do think a lot of these people that spread these theories and a lot of these misconceptions about AIDS, I do think a lot of them know better than to say a lot of that shit they say.
Well, yeah, because a lot of that stuff feeds into the stigma that's around HIV/AIDS. And if people not really familiar with the stigma kind of is, it's like an electric shocking fence. And I say that because it's not something that you can see until it hits. You know what I'm saying? So until the current hits. So we have all these ideas surrounding HIV and which are false theories and things like that. So, but they build certain ideas and feelings around HIV, and then when it really manifests itself, it doesn't manifest itself in a way a lot of times where the masses can see, but it's manifested in a way where a group of people are negatively affected, and you know it's continued over and over and over. So that's why, you know, people within the world of HIV continue to talk about stigma. Because stigma is a barrier that keeps us in a continuous cycle of kind of looking at it like, as man, we ain't got to learn about that AIDS stuff, man. I don't do this and I don't do that and I don't do this, and I'd be like, well, do you have sex? Yeah, but I don't have sex with these. Nah, all you need to do is have sex with the type of people you have sex with. Because AIDS has no face. HIV has no face.
But again, that's where we go back to, you know, like, because you, like you said, you work with this shit. You're the subject matter expert on this. And that's why whatever opinions you give or facts you drop, you know, I never push back on them because you work in this field. I don't. But one thing I can say is I do think people are aware of the stigma. They just don't think about it because they feel like, you know, a lot of people feel like it's justified. People know how they look at somebody when they find out they got AIDS or when they think they have AIDS or HIV. They know how they look at them. They just think it's justified. So, you know, and it's the same thing because a lot of people out here are walking around with fever blisters. You
right.
know, and we all know that fever blisters is herpes simplex 1. It's a form of herpes.
Right. Right.
And we know how people feel when they having a breakout. You know, people try to hide it. People try to do all of these other things. People feel uncomfortable. And we know how people feel around them when they're having a breakout. You know, they don't want to touch them. They don't want to touch nothing that they didn't touch. They don't want to this. They don't want to that. So, like, over half of the American population has herpes simplex 1. So.
Right.
The majority of the American population gets cold sores and fever blisters. Now, so
I got chicken pox.
So, Right. So for the majority of people, you know what that stigma is like because you live with it for those two or three. You live with a miniaturized version of it for those 2 or 3 days or those 4 or 5 days that you having a breakout. You know how you feel. Now imagine feeling like that all the time, except even more intense, even
right.
more pronounced, even more deadly, if you will, because people will respond that way. If they know that you have AIDS and you do something like drink out of their soda, people will lose their shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And see, that's where the education comes. Like, for once, you know, I know we said this before, but say it again right now. HIV is a blood-borne pathogen. For you, if you did not know, it's a blood-borne pathogen, which means that has to be transferred from one blood-borne product through another blood-borne product. Saliva is not a blood-borne product to that magnitude to where it carries the HIV. So we're talking about actual blood itself. We're talking about semen from the man. We're talking about vaginal fluids from the woman. We're talking about breast milk for the woman. And other than that, like brain fluid, heart fluid, lung fluid, joint fluid, amniotic fluid, like so those like other fluids that you wouldn't necessarily come in contact with unless you had a Mortal Kombat situation, right? But outside of that, it's blood, semen, vaginal fluid, breast milk, and amniotic fluid. You can put on that list with more common, but more so transmission fluids is those four. So drinking behind somebody won't do nothing. But like if they got other germs, you might get that. But it's not with HIV. People with HIV are more concerned about being in the room with you than you are with them. Why? Because
right.
their immune system is compromised. Yours ain't. So
right.
it's always my thing when I get a chance to speak on it is educating people, put them in the right mind frame, the right mindset. Look, first of all, let me say this because I get asked this question quite more than I expect to get asked this question. You can't transmit nothing you don't have. So. And the reason why I say that, because we get a lot of people come in looking for to be put on PEP, which I'll explain in a minute, but looking to be put on PEP or looking to get a HIV test because of some they just had unprotected sex and they just thought about what they did and they think they're not really sure, they don't really know, but they think, I don't know, I just don't want to have HIV. And they don't know what the person's status is. So if a person don't have HIV, you're not going to get HIV. It's just like this. If I don't have a dollar, I can't give you a dollar. It's just not going to work. I can't give what I don't have. Right? So get that out the way. Nobody can give what they don't have. You have to have HIV in your system to transmit it to the next person. And then with it being a blood-borne pathogen, we're talking about, once again, getting back to these fluids, breast milk, blood, semen, vaginal fluids. Outside of those fluids, like the... You know, you need ports of entry anyway for those fluids to be able to get into your system. So breast milk, we're talking about a baby ingesting breast milk from the mother. We're talking about blood, which can be, you know, any situation that you find yourself, cuts, open wounds. So ports of entry. These fluids need to get into ports of entry. That's why I'm saying cuts and wounds. So if you have, like if I'm having sex with a woman, and she's HIV positive, we're having unprotected sex, and I have ports of entry, cuts, scrapes, bruises, any port of entry on my penis, and my penis is inundated with vaginal fluids, it's a great chance that HIV will be transmitted. Now, if there are no cuts, scrapes, bruises, the chances of transmission is decreased, but there's still a chance there because cuts, scrapes, bruises can still occur during a sexual act. That sounds like that... Huh?
I was just gonna say, especially if it ain't lubricated properly.
Right. Well, that's another thing too. That's why I've been contemplating on getting certifications in like sex and sexuality and like human sexuality, but more so teaching people how to have good, safe sex, right? Because like you just said, if it's not lubricated, one of the main reasons HIV is transmitted through anal sex is because the lack of lubrication. And for one, you know, anal sex is the greatest way to transmit HIV through a sexual act. And one of the reasons, well, the main reasons for that is the anus, biologically, the anus wasn't designed to be penetrated. So if you're going to penetrate the anus, you got to learn how to lubricate the anus, clean the anus, and train the anus. And if you don't know what the hell that means that I just said, you should not be trying to have anal sex or you're going to mess yourself up. Just straight up. Like, because, I mean, we don't have time to sit down and break down anal sex on this show today. Maybe we might have, we're looking for some sexologists and some other sex experts to come on. We get one of them to break that down. But just don't have time to break that down today. But anal sex is the riskiest form, vaginal sex, then oral sex. Right? So think about what type of sex you're having and how you're having sex. If you don't like to use condoms, and you like to have random sex,
you like to get STDs?
Yeah, stop. Which stop it. But if you don't stop, if you can't stop, I don't know what to tell you other than wrap it up. Or, because the other thing, like if you don't want to use condoms, it's knowing your partner's status. But even in knowing your partner's status, how often are you getting tested? Because if you're getting tested once every 3 months, then people still got room to cheat. And, you know, stuff can still be transmitted. So all that's going to do is...
having raw sex with random people because you don't like to wrap it up. You either want to have kids, you want to get an STD, or both.
Bruh, like you'd be surprised how much that happens. People who are having random sex and going wrong. It happens. It's happening more than we expect.
Nah, trust me. Not more than I expect. I'm actually surprised when people tell me they're using condoms. And half of the time, I think they're lying. So,
I mean, trust me. I get it. Me and Pat, we both get it why people don't like using condoms. Trust me. Raw sex feels amazing. Oh, my God, I like going raw.
Hey, man, it's the way God intended.
But look here. I love myself way more than I like going raw. So, I'm going to wrap my thing up. I'm using condoms. Well, see, Pat's married. Now, Pat was a single stallion out here Yeah, Megan, I said it. Yeah, Megan, I said stallion because it was a male horse. But
that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah. But single stallion like myself out here, I like having sex. And that's one thing I think people got to be honest about themselves, too, when it comes to sexual education, safe sex. Like, where are you on the spectrum? Do you don't like it at all? Or do you like me on the other end who like, man, shit, if I could have sex like 2 times a day, 3 times a day, every day, I'm in there. That's me.
That's me too. Being married, I ain't changed shit about that.
Now, being single, that means that might not happen like that. And if I want it to happen, I still got to wrap it up because I don't know this person like that. And even if I get to know this person better, I still don't know them on that level like that. And even in saying that, that makes me think, probably shouldn't be having sex with that person. You know what I'm saying? Because when you say it, well, I don't know that person like that. That you'd be like, well, yeah, bitch, well, you might not want to have sex with them, right?
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, but it's you know, when it comes to safe sex, though, when it comes to the prevention of HIV, making sure that the number of new cases don't increase, it's a whole communal effort. So parents got to start talking about sex. We talked about this before. Parents got to start talking to your kids about sex. Schools, y'all got to start talking about sex. And competent people to come in and talk about sex. The community's got to start talking about sex. Sex is everywhere. Man, I started watching this show on Netflix called Big Mouth. You ever saw it? Mm-mm. But it's about teens going through puberty. And one teen, the hormone monster follows him around. So every time he get horny, like his sexual energy turns to this hormone monster who just make him do all type of stupid teenage hormonal stuff. And then They're actually showing genitals, they're showing penis, they're showing vagina. The young lady, after she got a period, her hormone monstrous came, so she got a female hormone monster. Like, all these things, like, this is a show that's on Netflix. It's a cartoon. So, sex is everywhere. And if you don't think you need to talk about it or you don't think you need to be a part of it, I mean, go into, like, looking at World AIDS Day, like, why does World AIDS Day exist? Like, HIV is real. So.
Yeah, but, you know, the sex conversation is so deep. You know, I've been having it with my kids for a while, and we're in the middle of going through a real deep dive into sex in general right now over the last few weeks. That's going to continue for the next few weeks to months. But one of the other things to that is, in addition to STDs and AIDS and all that other stuff, is, again, I've said it before, and I know rape is about power and control. But one of the things that I do wish people would consider more is, if you have a teenage boy, and I'm harping on boys specifically, if you have a teenage boy who is displaying impulse control issues before puberty, you might be looking at a rapist. And that's just me speaking from experience. What's up?
Well, behavior can be quelled, though.
It can, but what I'm saying is, in order to quell it, you've got to, and I left it hanging, so thank you for bringing that back. In order to change that, the reason I say you might be looking at a rapist is because when they go through puberty, they're going to experience a surge in emotions and hormones and drives and urges that, if they're not prepared for, is going to cause them to do something really stupid. And if they get in a compromised situation through whatever fault you want to blame, you can blame it on them, you can blame it on the situation, you can blame it on whatever. If they find themselves in a compromised situation, they already have impulse control issues because you've never really tried to instill discipline in them. And now they're in a situation where their hormones are raised and their urges are up, and they're with somebody who doesn't want to do anything either anymore or never did. You might be looking at a compromising situation. I'm using that as just another reason why you need to talk to your children about sex, period. If you don't get in the way, if you don't cut off or head off a lot of those puberty changes, those hormonal changes, hormonal urges, biological drives, you're setting your kids up for failure in ways that you may not even have thought about before. You know, things that you might not have even considered. It could be so much more than your son accidentally, or your son get, well, at that stage, maybe it is accidental, getting somebody pregnant, or your daughter getting pregnant. It could be them coming home with a life-altering STD. You know, something where they're taking medication for the rest of their lives.
Well, yeah, and I get when you bring it to that point. I get what you're talking about impulse control, because learning. Well, as a single dude, it's something that I wouldn't say impulse control, but in the realm of impulse control, because let's say you got a young man with a lack of impulse control, but also you're being taught that, man, you're supposed to try to smash something all the time. And so, like me, I'm still fighting and growing and trying, you know, getting over those thoughts and feelings of, man, I got to smash something all the time.
Like, well, it all works together. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm trying to simplify things, but it all works together. The biological drives work in tandem with the social conditioning and the cultural narratives that create these bad situations. They all work together, but I'm just trying to keep things brief, because I feel like if you're talking to your kids about sex, if you're talking to your kids about the things that you need to be talking to them about, you can head a lot of that stuff off at the pass. Now, are there going to still be some issues? Sure, of course. But you can do yourself a lot of favor. But at the end of the day, we're talking about STD prevention. We're talking about healthy relationships. We're talking about increasing the awareness of AIDS. And I can tell you, there's no other, you know, there's no other place where bad information spreads as fast as high school.
Yeah.
You know, so you're talking about getting these kids aware of a subject that they really want to talk about, because they really want to be engaged in, But everybody that they're talking about it with is ignorant. They don't know any better. So you introduce into that equation a bunch of misinformation that can be found on YouTube and the internet in general, a lack of critical thinking, a lack of critical thought, and the ability to properly process information. And you add all that stuff together into a world that creates a cultural narrative that says that you're supposed to want to have sex all the time, and you're supposed to take every opportunity to get sex, even if that means you should trick somebody or drug somebody or whatever the case might be, because they are still making songs about drugging people. That's still happening. And you got a recipe for disaster. And you also have a recipe for continued stigmas, where now you do have young kids, and I work with young kids on a daily basis. I can tell you, even the brightest ones aren't that bright. They are, and I'm saying that in jest. I don't mean no disrespect by that.
But I mean,
what I'm saying is they very much will take a piece of bad information and run all the way to the house with it. You know, you got kids still running around seriously saying, I ain't going to kiss her. She look like she got AIDS on her lips.
Nah, yeah, and I get that, and that's a part of the stigma to the ignorance and the stigma that lead to people being objective. Well, I ain't want to say objectified, but ostracized rather. But it's knowledge, man, practical application of the information that you get, because a lot of people who I've come across who work in medical fields, just graduate from medical fields and things, and know this information, know this prevention stuff, but still choose to put themselves in risky situations, you know. But real quick, I want to do this real quick, like, because if everybody ever wondered what is World AIDS Day and why. So World AIDS Day takes place every December 1st. It's an opportunity for people worldwide to unite in the fight against HIV, to show support for people living with HIV, and to commemorate those who have died from AIDS-related illnesses. And it was founded in 1988, which was where AIDS Day was the first ever global health day. And it sent over 101,600 people are living with HIV in the UK. Globally, there's an estimated 36.7 million people who have the virus. Despite the virus only being identified in 1984, more than 35 million people have died of HIV or AIDS, making it one of the most destructive pandemics in history. Today, scientific advances have been made in HIV treatment. There are laws to protect people living with HIV, and we understand that, and we understand so much more about the condition. Despite this, each year in the UK, this is talking about the UK specifically, over 43,000 people are diagnosed. But we, you know, going back to the numbers for the United States, let me give you these numbers. Like when I said black male to male sexual contact, it was like 9,000 people. And this was, these are specific subpopulations. So 9,807 in black male to male sexual contact, Hispanic male to male sexual contact, 7,436, white male to male sexual contact, 6,982, black women heterosexual 4,008, black men heterosexual 1,717, Hispanic heterosexual 1,058, white women heterosexual 999. So there are a lot of people who are being diagnosed every year with HIV, and this is something that doesn't have to continue happening. That's one of the things we want to make sure that we keep putting out there is this is not something that has to continue. It doesn't have to go on. But there are different variables that go into why people have unprotected sex, and we don't want to just mow over that as if it's just a couple things. There are a plethora of different reasons why. So being able to do our
really
best.
Though?
Yeah, they are. Because
there's more than 10.
I would say there's more than 10. Because, I mean, like, for one, sex is a coping method.
No, but I'm not talking about why people have sex. I'm saying why people have unprotected sex.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So, like, sex is a coping method, but unprotected sex, that shit feel good. But coping is about pleasure, though, right? Seeking pleasure. So, unprotected sex.
It could be about running away from pain, though.
But pleasure is the opposite of pain.
Yeah, but running away from something and running towards something can be viewed differently, psychologically speaking.
No, I mean, I do get that. I do get that. But in the running away from pain, one does, can, or I ain't gonna say does, but one can find pleasure. And we know pleasure, both pleasure and pain can be addictive.
That's true. That's true.
So, but it's just, you know, being coping with life, looking for pleasure, looking for certain things. Now, if you ask me to sit down right now and list out the things, I don't do that. But I do think there are a number. Huh?
I agree. I think there are a number of different reasons why people have unprotected sex. I don't know that I think there's a lot of them. But then, too, I'm not nitpicking. I'm like, you can boil a lot of them down to the same five or six reasons. But that's opinion-based as well, so... Anyways, I was just curious because it made me start thinking. That reminds me, did you ever read that book, Bottle of Lies?
Not yet.
I sent it to you, right?
You probably did. Send it again.
You tripping, bro. All right, go ahead. Finish your bottle.
Man, my reading list be expanded all the time.
It's an audio book, bro.
Oh. Well, yeah, send it to me again.
It's an audio book.
Send it to me again, then, so I can listen to it.
All
right. Hey, man, at least I'm being honest.
Nah, you know what? Real shit.
But, I mean, you know, like, all in all, now I'm getting ready to wrap this up, but all in all, HIV is preventable. It's totally, totally preventable. STDs are preventable, but education, resources, testing, all those things need to be in place. If I'm in an area where the education about sex lacks, the resources to safe sex things lack, just information about sex period doesn't exist or is lacking, it's gonna be a good chance that I might get an STD. That increases my chances of getting an STD. But if I'm in an environment where I have all the resources I need, that decreases my chances. Now, from there, it just comes to human behavior. What type of choices am I going to make? But also, what influences these choices? So, just being able to look at all that, but getting people to really think, have real thoughts and concepts about safe sex, about HIV transmission, not just come up with some dumb stuff out there, but really understand why days like World AIDS Day exist and how it impacts people within our community. You know what I'm talking about?
Word.
So any and this is a shorter show today, but we just want to make sure we get to it, get to our topics on human trafficking within our community and World AIDS Day. Also HIV within our community. So, you know, give the people a different parting shot today, Pat. Give them something different.
How is this the shortest show? It's an hour and a half.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, it's 8 o'clock.
Well, same time show then. Never mind. They don't. Don't be trying to put me on the spot, dog. What's your parting shot, dog?
That was my parting shot. You said give them a different one. I gave them a different one.
I'll fight you, Pat.
I believe it. It's too bad everybody gonna be here except you when we have our retreat.
I know, man. I gotta work, man. I got that. Well, speaking of World AIDS Day, that day the young man Ryan White, who a lot of the HIV services and one of the faces of HIV prevention, Ryan White's, we're having an event where his mother is coming down, so she's our special guest that day. So that's going to prevent me from being there. Tomorrow, if you're in the Tallahassee area, tomorrow I will be on the radio with a young lady named Dr. Brianna Jernay. It will be on 98.3 FM, and it will be at 4:35 p.m. And so listen in to Heaven 98.3 FM at 4:30 p.m. That way you can hear Dr. Brianna Journey and I have a discussion about PEP and PrEP when it comes to HIV/AIDS prevention. So, you know, check us out, man. Check us out. Other than that, I'm Joseph Ward. He's Patrick Urban. This is the Freedom Train podcast series. Two fingers in the air like a player, because y'all know we just don't care. And we up out of here.